97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the World Cup. Anson Dorrance, head coach of the UNC women's soccer team, is our guest. Anson, let's talk about what's going on in Russia right now. Germany, the defending champions, out at the group stage. Who would have predicted that?
Well, actually, if you look at the data from the previous world champions, you'd predict it. Because if you go back to 1998, the French won in 1998, and then they were eliminated in group play. And the following World Cup, the Brazilians won, and then they were eliminated in the quarterfinals. And if you go to 2006, the Italians won, and they were eliminated in group. If you go down to 2010, the Spaniards won, they were eliminated in group. So basically, this is the trend. The trend is the defending world champion gets eliminated in group play. And honestly, I get it. I remember when I was the U.S. Women's National Coach, I only wanted to coach through that one string. I wanted to coach my championship and then sort of escape. And there are a lot of reasons for this. Sometimes when you keep the same team, keep the same coach, basically you don't make good choices on the roster. I think an elite coach can teach everything he knows in a four-year World Cup cycle. And then you've got to basically retire him and bring someone else in, because then all kinds of positive things happen. One of the positive things is you get to shake up your roster. If you've won a World Cup like we did in 1991, I would have been very reluctant to change my roster for 1995. Why? Because, well, heck, these kids just won a World Championship for me in 91. So why am I going to cut them? So there's an emotional attachment to every player, so you lose your objectivity. And then also, you need new blood. You need new ambition. You need new energy. You don't want to win the same way you did, because it's impossible. The game evolves. You need new ideas, but your tendency, if you've won, is to go with the old ideas. So there's so many reasons. It's not a surprise to me. If you look at the data, it's not a surprise. Now, obviously, a journalist and someone in the media will jump all over this because it's an interesting story for the people that know nothing about the game. But for someone that studies the game and reviews it like I do, it's not a surprise, which is why what I'm going to try to do when I have this chance to meet with a new U.S. president, because we have a new one, obviously, because we didn't qualify for the World Cup, and our previous president, Sunil Gulati, lost his opportunity to lead. I'm going to go on and tell the next guy, listen, when you hire a World Cup coach for the men or the women's side, give him a four-year tenure, fully support him, allow him to retire with emeritus status, inject him somewhere else if you like in the MLS with a $100,000 bonus a year, or the NWSL if you're coaching on the women's side. Keep the knowledge he's gained in the World Cup, redistribute it, you know, in the professional league, but don't give him a tenure beyond that four-year block, because all kinds of negative things happen. One is the guy invariably will be fired, and all of a sudden there's a bitterness between a guy that's done some great service for the country and the leadership, which is never a good thing. And the other thing is, in my opinion, it just doesn't work.
You mentioned the U.S. not getting in. And during the televising of these games, I've seen this commercial play several times. Hey, America, sorry you didn't make it, but now you can root for Germany, or now you can root for Brazil. That kind of hurts a little bit.
No, I think it's good-natured teasing. Yeah, that's a Volkswagen ad. So, you know, I get it. I know what they're doing with the ad. But, honestly, I think it's sort of funny, because obviously they're trying to have the personalities of representing the different countries have a radical example of that country. You know, root for Germany, we brought you the Frankfurter. You know, root for Switzerland, we brought you the Swiss knife or something. I think it's kind of funny, so I'm not the least bit hurt by it or disturbed in any way. I just think it's a great way to tease us, especially in light of our current foreign policy, which is, you know, make America great again. We've become isolationists, and so I kind of enjoy the teasing, honestly.
Why haven't the men performed to the level that the women have?
Well, if you look at the men's game has been going on for extended periods. We're trying to catch up with the rest of the world, and we still haven't caught up. For us to be able to compete with some of these elite countries on a consistent basis, we need, a higher level domestic league. Or we've got to have our players, and this is a Jurgen Klinsmann position, we've got to have our players playing on the top teams in Europe. We certainly have some now. Obviously, the best example for us is Pulisic, who does a phenomenal job for Borussia Dortmund, a team that is capable of competing against the Champions League teams. And so we need more of our elite players playing at that level. Until that happens, it's always going to be difficult for us to compete internationally. Now, should we be able to compete within CONCACAF, our area of qualification? Absolutely. And so the fact that we haven't qualified out of our relatively weak group is an indictment against where we are right now. Although it took a perfect storm to eliminate us, and honestly, the game is so unfair sometimes, you are eliminated. And not because of your lack of quality, but because of, you know, a little bit of bad luck. Still, having said that, the women aren't as far behind as the men were and are in trying to catch up with the world game. And also, Charlie, you could probably do a pretty good ranking right now of the elite women's teams in the world without any knowledge of soccer. If you could just take the freedom that the women have in all the countries in the world and rank your women's soccer teams based on the cultural freedom that the women have, you do a pretty good job with ranking the elite women's teams in the world. So one reason we're in such good shape on the women's side is because our women enjoy wonderful freedom. When a minivan loads up for the weekend, it's not just the boy that's being loaded up in the minivan to play in the soccer games that weekend. It's the boy and his sister. And it's not that the parents are just sitting on the sideline for the boys' games. No, they support the young boy and the young girl as they compete in their athletic events. And that's very rare, and it's all relative, again, to the cultural freedom that the girls and women have in the countries that are competing in our game. So that also gives us an enormous advantage on the women's side.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Anson Dorrance, the head coach of the UNC women's soccer team, about the World Cup. Anson, when the World Cup first got awarded to Russia, there was a lot of controversy about that. I haven't read or seen very much about it being in Russia now that it's being played. I think everybody seems to be concentrating on the games themselves, but Qatar is still really controversial, how Qatar got the next World Cup coming up. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question there is corruption at the highest levels of FIFA. I mean, obviously, anyone that's been reading the news understands how this works. And it works in a really interesting kind of way. I mean, when you're voting to see who hosts the World Cup, all votes count the same. So the German vote counts the same as, you know, the Zimbabwe vote. Obviously, if you're in the process of, you know, buying votes, when you purchase a vote in Zimbabwe, it's a heck of a lot less expensive than trying to purchase your vote in Germany. And the German vote is probably unimpeachable. You probably won't be able to, you know, convince that guy who is probably a retired, you know, German multimillionaire to accept this bribe to have this vote go in a certain direction. But if you look at countries that are, you know, in desperate need for any kind of, you know, financial support, if you look at the corruption in so many leadership structures across the world, these votes are basically on the market. So here's the cost for the, you know, the vote in this particular country in a poor African nation. Here's what it'll cost you for a Caribbean nation in CONCACAF, our region. So all these votes are up for grabs. And, you know, I'm not sharing anything unique or I'm not, you know, breaking news for the world about how all this stuff works. And Qatar basically bought a World Cup. Could they afford to? Absolutely. I mean, they're pulling oil out of the ground and they're in a position where, yeah, they want to enhance their international image. They want to enhance their future. And maybe this is a good investment for them to go out and, you know, buy enough votes to make sure they host it. And so I'm not really sharing anything unique. We all understand the political structures and how it works in FIFA. And we're all hoping that eventually we can have unimpeachable, incorruptible leadership across the board. But let's face it, right now we don't. And all those votes are up for bid.
Well, we'll come back to FIFA in just a second. And this is sort of related to FIFA. 2026. How unusual is it for a geographic region to be awarded the cup as opposed to a specific country? 2026 goes to North America. So the U.S., right, is hosting most of the games, but Canada and Mexico, some of the games. That I don't follow soccer the way you do, but that seems unusual.
It is unusual, and honestly, I really like it. I think it's going to be a wonderful marriage between our neighbors. It'll bring us together in a very positive way. I mean, with, so many of the, isolationist principles of the United States right now, it's becoming a ridiculous narrative that, we don't want to be involved with the rest of the world. And I'm enough of a liberal to want to embrace the world. I mean, I was born and raised overseas. So for me, this sort of thing is a very positive thing. I've recruited Canadians. I love the Canadians. If you look at my lineage, we all did a DNA search, for this World Cup since the U.S. wasn't in it. And I've got, some Mexican roots. And so I love the fact that we're embracing the Canadians, our, wonderful neighbor to the north, and embracing the Mexicans, our wonderful neighbor to the south. And I really like this this community World Cup. So I think it's a great solution for us because we do want to host it. We'll probably certainly have the plurality of the matches played in the United States. But I think this is a wonderful way for us to embrace our neighbors in a very real way, not just through sport, but economically, because this will benefit the economies of all three countries in the most positive way. I look at it as a real positive.
Do the logistics matter at all? I mean, the games in Russia are in different venues, but they're all within the same country. There's a heck of a difference between that and going from Toronto to Mexico City.
Yes, no, and I think what they'll try to do, and obviously I'm speculating, but my guess is the group play, the teams will be located in one venue. So I think there'll be one group playing in Canada, so they won't have to travel as much. Another group playing in Canada. And so I think they're going to try to keep the teams so that the travel distance is not that great. And once they get into the knockout stages, then maybe the travel between the venues you're in for group play and the knockout stages will be a lot greater. But then you've got more of a break between games. So I think that'll protect the legs of the athletes. And I still think we can make this work. But honestly, when I saw that, I thought it was a wonderful solution. I'm so glad we're going to be hosting this event. And I'm so glad we are hosting it with our neighbors, because I'd love for us to reintegrate ourselves into the world community, and I think this is one way we can do it through sport.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the World Cup with Anson Dorrance, head coach of the UNC women's soccer team. Anson, let's get back to Qatar, the bidding for Qatar, the bidding for Russia, that was questionable as well. Hasn't FIFA cleaned up its act? That's what we hear from FIFA.
Who knows? I mean, who am I to judge now? Because I really don't know what's going on unless I do read something. Maybe it is cleaned up. I would love to think that it is, but we're all human beings. We're all easily corruptible. I'd love to say that, it's all been cleaned up. I think I'd be skeptical at first, but I think there is potential for this to go the right way. Honestly, Charlie, I can't really address it because I just don't really know.
You talked about the sport, this specific sport, but sports in general, bringing people together. And you go to a pizza restaurant in Carrboro, and what's up on the screen? And you have people from different cultures speaking different languages, sitting there eating pizza, watching the World Cup. So what is it about sport that brings people together in that way?
Well, you know, it galvanizes us because obviously what's going on is a competition. So if you think about it, there is a little bit of antagonism because obviously you want, if you're a tribal with the team you're supporting, and you want your team to win, and you want obviously your opponent to lose. But having said that, if you look at sport in its pure form, it's still a very positive thing. And one thing I really enjoyed in watching the World Cup, even when teams were eliminated, you would see these guys that are absolutely gutted because, like the Germans, for example, because you brought that up in the first part when we started chatting, they were absolutely gutted, and yet they had the class to walk up to their opponents, many of whom they play with in other leagues across the continent or the world, and they're embracing each other, and, a team that's going on can certainly feel the pain of, you know, this team that isn't going on and how they're feeling. And so I still like the human element of the pathos when you're eliminated and the exhilaration when you win, but also the human connection between the two separate tribes that are going in different directions. And for me, that still is a very wonderful demonstration of the human spirit.
So the World Cup and the Olympics, to me, seem unique in that regard. What is it that would make them unique, that it is a gathering of the world's sports teams?
Yes, and I really feel like this does have huge potential. I mean, we all sit here in fear of, you know, what might happen with North Korea. But our youth teams play the North Koreans, and you can see the sportsmanship between the two cultures. And of course, the impression we get is every North Korean is raised to hate us because they've been, I think, brainwashed in that direction. But I think when you get together on the field, you can certainly see a certain kind of humanity that I think can destroy this this vitriol that goes back and forth politically. There are FIFA protocol officers at youth events that basically get together with these youth teams and explain the politics of the situation and how you have to conduct yourself to be respectful of all the different cultures and different political entities in the event. And I think there's so many positive things about these world games that I think do bring us together. Because right now I'm looking at this event in Russia, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm a cold warrior, so I go way back to, the Cold War. And yet, if you look at it, of course, with the Soviet Union, pre-Russia, there was a tremendous animosity between the American people and the Russian people. And yet now I'm watching this World Cup and seeing how well it's organized. Honestly, I have a little bit more, human connection to the potential that, maybe one day there will be peace everywhere with, a world economy that connects us as opposed to, different political, machinations going on for world domination. So for me, I still see the potential for, world peace with sport.
Let's finish in the minute or so that we have left by going back to Qatar. So you have the big questions about how Qatar got it in the first place. You have, a situation that the players are going to be playing in 100, 110, 120 degree heat. Can sport overcome even something like that? The questions about Qatar in the first place, the poor conditions for the players, can it overcome even that?
Well, I think what that will do is it will continue to, I think, motivate our journalists to talk about how ridiculous this was. And how, corrupt, the vote had to go to have this event there. But I still am convinced that we'll try to figure out ways to make this work. Maybe the game changes a bit. Maybe teams don't press because pressing in that kind of heat for 90 minutes is physically impossible. So maybe we'll have a different tactical platform for how the games are going to be played in Qatar. And obviously, if you look at this World Cup, the thing that distinguishes it is most goals are scored on set pieces right now. Maybe that will be what the Qatar event will be, because you just can't run enough to, get up and back. You don't have the energy to do anything except bunk it and counter. So who knows? Maybe it'll be the evolution of a different kind of game to survive the heat.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Anson Dorrance. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.